Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
This is not a negotiation. I'm running this team because the Reinsdorfs want me to, and I'm going to run it that I think is best.
And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
I think your play is embarrassing. The pro player thing, this is basketball.
Follow Locked On Bulls on social media. On Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Pat. And on Facebook, at Facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Streaming live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line at 331-979-1369. Follow us on Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. On Instagram, at Locked On Bulls. On Facebook, Facebook.com/LockedOnChiBulls. Matt, what's going on? Wow, what a performance on ESPN last night. How about that? Jimmy's return for the second time. We got exactly what we deserved. How about that? LaVine vs. Butler Part 2? Man, that was almost a mirror image of what we saw, what we experienced live in person almost a little bit over a year ago to date. Man, that was everything I could have asked for and more, especially LaVine and Butler down the stretch last night. Bulls pull off the win against the 76ers, and it was even sweeter watching LaVine dominate late in the stretch. How you doing coming off that win last night?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? It was lovely. I really enjoyed watching that game last night. I know I've sort of been tagged as a 14%er, as we're calling it these days, but I mean, I will take a win like that on national television over another, you know, tank win any day. Absolutely. And I would like to go on record with my first specific comment and or compliment about last night's game going to one Zach LaVine, who, as we kind of discussed yesterday and earlier on this week, we were a little hard on with some of his missteps and mistakes down the stretch of a still pretty impressive Friday night 4-overtime win against the Hawks last week. And we have been very critical of his late game decision making because we're trying to figure out if he can't be a clutch late game winner for this young team moving forward. Last night, Zach LaVine was carrying this team through a slow start from Lauri Markkanen because of his two quick fouls. And then when it got down to the fourth quarter, LaVine took over. He didn't have the toughest job on the final play that put the Bulls ahead, where he got the ball back when he was the one inbounding the ball with that half court possession, because the Sixers completely screwed up their switch on that play and gave LaVine a clear path to the basket. But either way, LaVine recognized the opportunity that was in front of him, saw a chance to get to the lane instead of pulling up for a shot, which almost always has been his instinct in those late game moments. Got it done, and that was one of many buckets he made in the fourth quarter while the Bulls were fighting their way to a win. So I loved to see that from LaVine last night.
On the biggest stage, and you know, the one thing that I started kind of laughing at, and I think some Bulls fans, either if you saw this or you didn't, pregame, Jim Boylan talked about one thing in specific and talked about going to his players and saying, you know, other teams around the league are getting a lot of games on national TV, and you guys should take this as extra motivation that our team is never playing on national TV. This is our one chance. You know, we played two games before this, and we only get three games all year to play on ESPN or ABC or TNT. The Bulls played the 76ers on opening night. They played the Bucks in the second week of November on national TV, and this was their third and final game of the season on national TV. He said, we should take that as extra motivation, and we deserve it. We're the Chicago Bulls. We should play. We should be playing all the time and want to play on the national stage. they came out and made a statement. And I was kind of laughing at that. I was a little bit. I was like, that's, I mean, think about where you are right now. You're a rebuilding team. But, man, Zach LaVine has backed it up. I mean, if that was used as extra motivation for him, and even last year, too, think about it. When Minnesota came to town and it was for Jimmy's first return back home, Zach LaVine stepped up and scored, what, 35 points? 35 points and ended up being the guy that went toe-to-toe with Jimmy last year. And in the final seconds was the guy that ultimately stopped Jimmy from knocking down a corner three to win the game against the Bulls. So, I mean, maybe there is some truth to what Jim Boylan was saying about the Bulls playing better and deserving and wanting to be on that national stage and using that as extra motivation. So, I mean, like you said, credit back to Zach LaVine, though. Let's start there, though. Lauri Markkanen going out with two fouls in that first quarter, I think that pushed LaVine to need to be better in this game early on, and certainly he showcased that last night.
He did. I mean, the other, not only was he, you know, making plays and leading a team that was kind of enduring a rough game from its other big important piece right now, Lauri Markkanen, who, by the way, only took 9 shots last night. It was kind of another quiet dud of a game from Chris Dunn. Otto had a bit of a bounce back game after his really tough game on Monday night, or on Tuesday night. He finished 6-17 for 15. But, you know, to me, the greatest part about LaVine's game last night, yes, a very efficient 14 of 26 from the field, but he was attacking the basket consistently, and he got to the free throw line 13 times. To me, if LaVine is going to continue to grow into a dominant offensive player in this league, the free throw attempts have to keep going up. We've seen that from him sometimes this season, but it hasn't been consistent. And I would also, you know, as a clause to that comment, say, by the way, LaVine has not been getting a whole lot of love from NBA officials this season. He's still trying to earn that respect as a guy who was kind of flying under the radar last season, playing still not quite at 100%, coming off an ACL. But the guy should get more calls than he does, but it's awesome when you see him be that aggressive and get to the free throw line, you know, like 10 plus times per game, because that, I think, ultimately is where LaVine should be as a 25 to 30 points per game scorer for this young team moving forward.
The one thing I can say about the 76ers is they severely, severely missed Joel Embiid last night. Look, the Bulls outscored the 76ers, the points in the paint.
Dude, Robin Lopez had like 14 offensive rebounds in the final minutes of this game. And it was insane.
But going back to my point is, Lauri Markkanen was in foul trouble early. Jim Boylan had to sit him for, what, 10 or 12 minutes right at the beginning of the first half. And the Bulls still outscored the 76ers points in the paint, 60-42 in this game. They missed Joel Embiid so much, and I wonder how that would have shifted this game entirely should he have played. But nonetheless, still,
the Bulls lose last night if Embiid is playing. Let's just throw that out there. But
Robin Lopez, though, you brought him up, so let's quickly talk about him again. Man, 7 for 13 last night, 19 points, a +7 in the plus minus. He had 9 rebounds, 3 assists. Man, the dude is on fire. I don't even know how to explain it anymore. It's unbelievable. Matt, I was going back and trying to figure out if I could find a way to figure out a streak, if there was any other big at his age, his experience, that had a streak like this. And if there, what other NBA players are comparing to what Robin Lopez is doing right now with the Bulls? And I couldn't really find it. The only thing that I could find that came close to this, at least in Chicago Bulls history, over a season or over a span, is players that have played 10 years or longer in the NBA, in Bulls history, that have scored 16, that have averaged 16 points, 5 rebounds, and shot over 60% for longer than a 10 game period or more. Artis Gilmore has done it twice in Bulls history. Nobody else has done that. So Robin Lopez is doing that right now. So he joins Artis Gilmore 2 seasons, and that was 80-81 and 81-82. So Robin Lopez will be putting his name in that card. That just shows you like how ridiculous this stretch of play Robin Lopez has had over these 13, 14, 15 games. It's crazy. What else can we say? Like he's deserving all this credit too. National TV, Doris Burke, and the broadcasting team spent, I think, a good 5-10 minutes just going back and forth talking about all the praise that he deserves, and rightfully so, because going back to the player mutiny too, he was the guy that ultimately brought everybody else together and said, hey, ultimately, let's not do this. Like, let's find another way. Let's find another solution to this. And I thought that was a good point. Credit to Doris Burke for bringing that up too last night.
Yeah, which, by the way, really nice, refreshing change of pace to hear Doris on the call of the nationally televised game last night. Some nincompoop on Twitter was like trying to tell me, because I tweeted about it. I was like, I'm so excited to you know, listen to Doris and her commentary tonight. And somebody on Twitter was like, are you being sarcastic? I was like, no, Doris is awesome. And then he went on some, you know,
that's the downfall of Twitter, man.
Misogynist rant about how Doris isn't good at her job, and I just muted him. But yeah, so that was
classic.
That was fun, you know, because as much as we enjoy Stacey and his rotating panel of play-by-play guys this season as Neil is nearing retirement, it's just nice to have a fresh voice and a fresh change of pace for the people calling the game. But you're right. You got to give Robin Lopez his due credit, because the month of February he had, you know, we've been fawning over the strong month of February performances we saw from Lowry and LaVine, which, you know, obviously when you're talking about the rebuild and what it means and where they are, is vastly more important than Robin Lopez. But you can't disconnect them, because especially for Markkanen, but also for LaVine, Robin Lopez has aided in their development this season, and I don't think you can deny that. I mean, LaVine was talking last night after the game about how Robin Lopez is the best screen setter he's ever played with, ever, at any level. And that's one of the underrated and overlooked things about bigs in the NBA and their game, because if you're not pouring in 30 points a night like an Embiid or an Anthony Davis, then people tend to forget about you. But Robin does those little things very well. He kept the Bulls in this game with extra possessions late with 5 offensive rebounds. And as we've talked about what the Bulls do with their front court depth moving forward into next season, year 3 of the rebuild, there's more and more steam behind the idea of keeping Robin Lopez around, because we didn't buy him out. And I think that this is in one of these weird situations where the Bulls might, if they are interested in keeping Robin Lopez, and if there's mutual interest and he's interested in sticking around and seeing this rebuild through, his play over the last month and a half is going to make it harder for them to keep him. Because this version of Robin Lopez is peak Robin Lopez, and other teams around the league might be looking at what he's doing and the impact he's having on this team and saying, we could use that guy, and offering him a sizable deal that the Bulls don't feel they are in the position to match. The other thing you think about is the fact that when Wendell Carter Jr. is healthy, Lopez's role on this team significantly diminishes, and he might not be happy with that, because if they do decide to sit down and negotiate with Rolo this summer, you know he's going to want some kind of guarantee about playing time, because he's been in and out of this rotation a lot and he's been a good sport about it. But he can't prove his value with a stretch like this to then just go back and be a bench warmer and a cheerleader, because I, you know, he's clearly more useful than that.
It's a good point. And if, you know, that's why I think talking about Robin Lopez, and, you know, if you're backing up your statements about John Paxson, Gar Foreman, and the Reinsdorf specifically, if, and especially Boylan too, if they bring him back too, back up your statements then. If you do feel like Robin Lopez is a key part of this team, and he has been a really good veteran for this team this year and even last year, put your money where your mouth is then. If he's saying he's willing to stay, but it's going to cost you a little bit more than you thought, put your money where your mouth is then. How much is he actually worth to this team then? And if his teammates are saying the same thing too, right? Like, That's a conversation for the end of the season, though, and we'll see how he continues to play and what the market is. That's the thing, is like the market's like unknown at this point now.
And the Bulls have so much more work to do outside of trying to keep Robin Lopez as far as fixing and improving this roster for next season. And they only have a shade under $20 million to spend, because I can't imagine they're going to go into the luxury tax next season when they know that realistically they're still building and not competing. Based on the track record of this ownership group, they're not overpaying next year. So they will only spend the money they have to stay under the cap. They need a lot of bench help. They need a point guard. Yeah, they might be interested in keeping Robin Lopez around for all of the reasons he's proving himself to be valuable right now, but they can't spend most of their money on Robin Lopez, because when it comes to filling out the second unit of this team,
it's true.
They have too many other holes to fill.
It'll be interesting to see how these last 5 weeks affects the way Robin Lopez will get paid. It'll be interesting, man. Let's keep talking about this game, though. Specifically, let's go to what the 76ers did really fast. More so, let's talk about Jimmy Butler really fast. That first half, man, I thought Jimmy Butler was on pace to maybe go for a 40 piece. You know, he, especially in that first quarter, man, he was knocking down shots left and right. Looking at his first half stats, he was 6 for 9. He had 12 points and 4 assists. He was a +8 in the plus minus. I thought the 76ers were going to start running most of their offense through him. Ben Simmons looked really good too. 76ers were running back and forth. The Bulls ended up catching them, though. They had a good second quarter. They fought back, and then they ended up tying it. And then that fourth quarter, too, it was like, this is where I was talking, Matt. Like, when we went to that game against the Timberwolves back in February 2018, Jimmy had such a good first, and then it was second half, fourth quarter specifically, Jimmy Butler, and then it was Jimmy Butler, Zach LaVine, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth for the majority of the fourth quarter. Similarly, we saw that again last night. What did you think about Jimmy Butler and the 76ers?
Yeah, you know, I was assuming that we would see a more offensively aggressive Jimmy in the absence of Embiid, and he certainly was looking to get himself going early on, and it was, you know, off to a quick start and cooking Zach LaVine on the other end for the Sixers to get them out to an early lead. But, you know, 8 of 18 for 22 points, kind of underwhelming. Only got to the free throw line 7 times. 4 assists, a few steals, which we come to expect from Jimmy. You know, what I saw was a very frustrated Jimmy Butler as the Bulls were still hanging on and hanging on and hanging on. And I think Jimmy felt like they should have, you know, even with Embiid's absence, handled this game and gotten a win more easily than they did, and ended up ultimately losing. And especially, you know, down the stretch in the fourth quarter, with some of the miscues and breakdowns that the Sixers had. And like, yeah, credit to the Bulls last night for gutting it out and winning that game. But the Sixers' execution down the stretch in the fourth quarter was terrible. You know, like, not only did they have that turnover on a transition breakaway opportunity when Ben Simmons just straight up lost the ball, like flew out of his hand, there were other really poor offensive possessions from Philly down the stretch that frustrated Jimmy. And then, of course, the cherry on top was how Mike Scott just completely screwed up a switch on that final play that led to LaVine just coasting down the lane to put the Bulls ahead. Like, Jimmy got back to the Sixers bench for a timeout with half a second left and was furious. So, I mean, a little bit of schadenfreude in that I love the fact that Jimmy demanded a trade from Minnesota, got to Philly, and immediately was like, this is so much better. You know, I just needed a fresh start. This is a young, exciting team. The Sixers are clearly all in. They made the Tobias Harris acquisition before the deadline, and they still just reek of dysfunction to me. And now that he's not ours, and for all of the different ways he has run his mouth and completely turned his egoless, humble kid from Tomball, Texas personality on its head and is so self-obsessed about winning and me and I am a winner, and if you're not a winner, then you suck. I love seeing Jimmy Butler fail. I'm sorry, I do. And I think that this Sixers team, despite the fact that on paper they might be the most talented team in the East, are going to crumble in the playoffs because of stuff like what happened last night.
Like I said before, I think it had a lot to do with missing Embiid. That's an excuse, but still, Embiid's a huge part of what they do. And like you said too, Jimmy Butler in that second half, just looking at his stats, you know, I had mentioned going 6 for 9 in that first half, and then he went 2 for 9 in the second half. And he got to the free throw line, you had mentioned 6 for 7. All 6 of those free throws he made came in the second half. I looked at that, and you had mentioned some of the turnovers that the 76ers had in that fourth quarter. Specifically that last play where LaVine got to the bucket and ultimately took the lead. Doris Burke, how about that? She called the play. Called the play in the inbound. Stay with the defender. He's going to try to attack the basket. And she was right.
Entry pass. Don't lose contact with him.
And Butler's the one who will shade him. LaVine has to get it in. Lopez gets it back to him. LaVine with the runway. Lays it in. Plus the foul. Zach LaVine does it again. Chicago by one. They with had 1.6 to go.
They had plenty of time. And so Robin catches at the elbow. Just a simple handoff. Two defenders go toward Robin. Everybody forgets about LaVine, and he beats you yet again.
That was terrible on Mike Scott's part, man.
Well, I mean, come on. Like, Zach LaVine is the one inbounding the ball, and you think he's not going to get the ball back?
Right.
You think instead they're gonna have Rolo pop out and just launch a three? Like, what? In what universe was LaVine not immediately getting that ball back?
That's what I don't understand, and it's not like LaVine was going to stop and try to pop a three there.
But see, that's the thing. I give him credit for not exactly doing that, even though anyone watching could have seen, oh my God, that the lane is a million miles wide. No one's there. Philly screwed up a switch. I was still terrified that LaVine was going to ignore that and just rise and shoot. Because in late game situations, he tends to like taking long shots, either, you know, long twos or threes. And we have talked about his court vision being an issue. So it seemed obvious at the time to say, oh my God, look, there's no one in the lane. Zach's got a clear path to the basket. But I still was like, he might just rise and shoot this. The clock's, you know, the clock's running down. As silly as it is to think that he may have just risen and shot that, that was a fear I had in the moment.
It was really good, and it was a really smart play, and the credit to Zach LaVine, and maybe he understood too that the Bulls weren't shooting great from the perimeter again last night. They were 6 for 23, right, again, 26.1% from three. So he understood that.
After going, what, like 4 of 25 on their Tuesday night game?
Yeah. And like, these are back-to-back.
Yeah, not a great shooting back-to-back.
Yeah, like back-to-back games where you're not great from the perimeter, but credit to both of these teams. Both of these teams are very good, have great defenses, have a lot of length. I'll give those two teams both a lot of credit. So it makes sense. So then the Bulls adjusted and were trying to attack the basket, and you saw in both of these games, they outscored them in the paint, and that's where Zach LaVine attacked. And so that's good adjustment from Zach LaVine. It's a very smart play from him, too. How about let's talk about the highlight of the year, I think. Ryan Arcidiacono, man, you know.
Yes.
I think I was really tough on him back in January. Talked about how, you know, since switching from Fred Hoiberg to Jim Boylan, talked about while he might be a nice piece and he can pass and he's got a decent level of basketball IQ, but not being able to shoot the way he was under Fred Hoiberg, dude gives it 110%, and he showed that last night. And Jim Boylan was so excited when he gave his body and laid full out for that ball. And then how about Otto Porter? I love this about Otto Porter's game too, and it has nothing to do with his shot. As soon as he sees even the slightest potential for a break, man, he gets out. He gets out, and he was there when he saw Archie about to dive for that ball. He was already out on the break, and that's why he ran out, grabbed the ball, took two steps, tossed it up to Zach LaVine, and Zach had the most ferocious dunk, man.
Rebound, saved, absolutely incredibly. Ridiculous highlight started by Arcidiacono.
you do it. Save a play. Give yourself an advantage. Jim Boylan talks all the time about having pride and representing the Chicago jersey. If there's something Chicagoans can dig right there, that's it. How about that effort?
It ends up with a hockey assist as you see Jim Boylan right to Archie Diacono.
It was all amazing. Like, clearly the best play of the season for the Bulls so far. You might see that in the top 10 best NBA plays of the season if and when somebody compiles that list of plays, because it was beautiful in three elements. Not only do you have a slam dunk champion finishing with authority at the rim, flying through the air, the high basketball IQ element of Otto, as you just said, to not only get that pass beautifully placed to Levine and looking forward, but to even start breaking down court when that loose ball was flying and Otto saw that Archie was going to have the opportunity to save it. And of course, Archie, who actually talked in detail after the game about the way that he is able to make those kinds of plays. It's about timing. It's about making sure you get a good grip on the ball and to make a right pass when you only can really, get the ball or bat the ball or, direct the ball in a split second. It was all just so beautiful. And like in a season that's been kind of lacking in highlight reel plays that are team highlight reel plays, it was just so refreshing to see. As you were just talking about Otto, that was one of the other comments that Doris had last night that I was like, this is completely on point. Not only her praise for Rolo and the ways that he helps this team, but the fact that Otto Porter always makes the right play. You talk about him being a great 3-and-D wing, and he's been in a little bit of a shooting slump recently, but he still always just makes the right play on both ends of the court. That was another example of that, and it's one of the reasons that he has helped this team so tremendously. You look at the team's net, individual player net ratings over the last month or so as things have turned around. Otto's right there in the top three. You know who else is? Ryan Archie Diacono. I loved that so much. For all of the jokes we make about Boylan and grit and tough and spirit and seeing Boylan jacked up like that and, giving Archie a pat on the butt and, pumping his fist, it was a perfect moment. And we haven't had many of those this year.
Yeah, that's for sure, man. Again, credit to Otto Porter, man. We talk about it, but we saw another example of that last night where the dude does the little things outside of the scoring and the three-point threat and some of the stuff that the Bulls actually need from him. He does the little stuff, too. Like I said, getting out on the break and just now you have three legitimate players that are willing to get out and run. Zach, Lowry, and Otto. And you're seeing that, man. And we actually do have now a guy that can toss lobs. Did we have that before? Like, Zach is your your guy that can catch lobs, but
Pow?
We didn't have a lob passer, did we?
Remember the Jimmy to Powell lob connection?
Oh, yeah. No, I do. Powell would throw lobs to Jimmy, right?
Right, exactly.
Didn't Powell have like one really weird one? I remember one specifically where, wasn't it a game winner?
It was a game winner, and it wasn't even a dunk. It was like a Jimmy tip-in. And he, was leaping towards the basket and like jumped over the guy guarding him and just tipped it in.
Powell, Brooks, Butler. Look, they get it to Powell.
Great time! What a pass by Powell to Sabonis!
The song
unbelievable.
That Jimmy batted it in one.
Go get it, Jimmy Butler, go get it.
Oh, my.
I'll tell you what, Powell, it was a touch pass to the rim. That was a great play out of the break. Watch
that
this.
That is a well-designed. Yeah.
Who was it against? I can't remember.
Dude, that was like half of the Bulls' offense that season was just pow Jimmy two-man stuff.
It's exciting when we see that, though, man. And the most important thing of this all, too, is once Chandler Hutchison gets healthy, man, I really hope he can help. Otto Porter can help him and help him develop some of these skills, too. Like, that would be a major plus, too. So, crossing my fingers on that. A couple other things from this game. because there was a lot of storylines that were built up behind this. Going back to the national TV perspective and that all of that, Matt, I've got to ask you, who do you think is most excited about this win? Four categories I got for you. It's the players, the coaching staff. Is it Gar Forman and John Paxson? Is it the Reinsdorfs? Or is it the fans?
I mean,
think about the national TV perspective from this and everything that built up to this and the player mutiny and everything that's led up to this season. Just the sweetness of this victory against the 76ers last night. Who do you think enjoyed that win the most last night?
I think the players, honestly. You heard Otto's comment after the game about how this was, you know, kind of a message to the rest of the league that they're getting ready to compete. You know, they're telling the rest of the league that they're coming. And, you know, LaVine said some similar things about, you know, this team, we're turning this thing around quickly. Like, you know, we've had a losing season, but we're starting to gel and we're starting to vibe with each other and we're starting to enjoy seeing the fruits of our labor as we've struggled to, you know, be a young team, a losing team, building chemistry, finding out the right ways to play. And I mean, I think far and away the players are the ones who are most excited about that, because, I mean, you mentioned Boylan's comment earlier about how they should take it as a slight and a sign of disrespect that this was one of only three nationally televised games this season. I don't think that it was disrespectful, because I think that the league appropriately figured out that the Bulls weren't going to be very good this season and weren't going to be worth being on national television. And when you were watching those games in December and January, that was an accurate assessment, right? Nobody wanted to watch that Bulls team on national TV. But, you know, ownership, maybe they got some, you know, joy and pleasure out of last night because they think it'll lead to more exposure and more national games next season, which I do think it will. Not necessarily this game in particular, but I just think the fact that the Bulls have started to play better basketball and their young stars are rising at the tail end of this season, coupled with the fact that the Bulls are always a big market team that gets lots of national television games when they are at least competent and watchable and semi-competitive, means that they will see a huge uptick in nationally televised games next season. I do believe that. And then, as for management, you know, maybe a little bit of vindication of saying, see, look at what we're doing. Look at what we're building here. And the fan base, the final of the categories that you put out there, I think last night didn't change anything. If you're an optimist about this young group, you double down on being an optimist when you see them win a nationally televised game against one of the better teams in the East. If you're a realist like I am, and I think you are, you know, you were encouraged by that, but you're not throwing a party in a parade for a win over a Sixers team missing one of its biggest pieces and one of the best players in the league. And if you're a pessimist and an apathetic Bulls fan, you don't care about that win. And if you're a tanker and a 14%er, then you're mad that they won. And I don't think one game necessarily changes any of that and any of those fan perspectives. I think Bulls fans are very entrenched on where they are right now, regardless of where that is on the spectrum of optimist to pessimist.
Totally agree. And there's definitely something to say about the players enjoying this win last night. You know, this builds off of that Celtics win a few weeks ago, too. You know, beating them, having a little bit of satisfaction in the fact that what they did to them 2 months ago and embarrassed them on their home floor, coming back, beating them, now beating a 76ers team too on national TV after some of the personalities on that same broadcasting, that same station, you know, embarrassed them. Like, all of this, I think, plays a factor in just how well this team is gelling at this time. And that's the unfortunate part too, is, you know, we're getting down to the end of the stretch of the season, and you wish this would have happened earlier on in the season. And injuries play a factor in that, too. But I think Otto's statement, too, was huge. This is a statement to the rest of the league. And, you know, we kind of laughed some of that off, and a lot of Bulls fans, I think, did that, too, last year when guys like Denzel tried to make statements like that, or a few other guys that maybe didn't have the cachet to say some of those things when maybe the Bulls went on a small winning streak or some things were a little bit more positive. But now, all the adversity the Bulls faced all year long, and Bulls are playing really well. Otto seems like a guy that people are backing, willing to buy into. When you hear Zach, somebody who is clearly one of the alphas on this team, say similar sentiments, that I feel like we've got guys on this team that can have firepower, feel like that this core is now gelling together. All of that, I think, plays a huge factor, and it's finally really nice to hear that coming from these guys from just, what, 6 weeks ago when we were hearing, like, you know, I don't know what's going on, and we weren't getting blown out this way a month ago when we heard Zach LaVine quotes after an Atlanta loss at the end of January. So it is a huge turnaround, and I'm glad to hear that. And I'm sure, you know, Garpax and Reinsdorf feel vindicated that this happened on ESPN in front of national TV, in front of viewers who were watching this against a 76ers team, and especially the little anecdote that happened too, that it's against a player that they traded not even 2 years ago. You know, as much as that doesn't really play a factor anymore, I'm sure they feel a small little bit of indication from that. And then the fans too, like you said, I like wins when they come against teams that are competitive and out of your league. And you're playing with your best team, and it's part of all the development. I've said that from day one. So,
yeah,
like you said, man.
Which, you know, and I know everybody's saying, oh, like, oh, you know, Pack, you hate wins. You all you're concerned about is ping pong balls right now.
I don't agree with that. I don't think you hate wins,
dude. Shinowski is just trolling me so hard. It's like every opportunity he gets during pre and post game, he cracks a joke about how I'm a 14%er and all I want is losses because of like a handful of games against other teams that are tanking that I really would love to see losses in, like the home and home with the Hawks. I was all on board losing both of those games for the security of where the Bulls are in the draft lottery standings right now. But I'm with you in that last night, beating the Sixers, even, yes, without Joel Embiid, and, you know, last week when you get, or last weekend, whatever it was, when you got a win over, yeah, at the time, chaotic, in turmoil Celtics team, but still a very good Celtics team, to get revenge over that embarrassment from earlier in the season. Wins like that, as you were saying, Jordan, I am totally okay with those. They show growth. They show that this young team cares. They show a lot of ways in which there is hope for the future. And that is, at the end of the day, more important than fractions of a percent when you're talking about hoping you land the number one pick in a draft. Look, you know, the Hawks lost last night and the Bulls won last night. So they slipped a little bit in that ground, and now the Bulls are only clear of the Hawks by 3 games. That is a concern in the back of my mind, no doubt about it. But seeing the Bulls win last night, seeing the way LaVine dominated down the stretch, all of the other role players who played their roles last night. Yeah, I'm not just okay with that. I'm happy about it.
Matt, I got a couple other things real quick, and then we'll get out of here. One, Zach LaVine loves playing on national TV and plays really well. Last 4 games on national TV. Last night, 39 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 turnovers, 1 steal, a +6 in the plus minus. Going back to the Bucks game on the 16th this season, this was the by far the worst game out of the four. 15 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 turnovers, 1 steal, and he was a minus 19. The opening night, he had 30 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 5 turnovers, 0 steals. He was a minus 10. And then that fourth and final game, 35 points, 5 rebounds, 1 assist, 2 steals, 1 turnover, a +7, and that was against Jimmy's Timberwolves back in February. So for an average of 29.8 points per game, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 3.3 turnovers, and an average of a -4 in the plus-minus over 4 games on national TV in 2 seasons with the Bulls. So get the Bulls more national TV games, because Zach LaVine will step up.
Yeah, and not just national TV in general, but I think specifically being an ESPN game, because yes, that's something we were talking about watching this game last night. It's like extra motivation, because as they were doing their pregame stuff, they were talking about that list that came out last week that we had talked about on this very podcast about, you know, ESPN's top 25 under 25 list, and the fact that Markkanen was on that list and LaVine was not, and some of the other people that were on that list ahead of LaVine, where you're saying, really? That guy? that guy beat out Zach LaVine to be on this list. And you know Zach LaVine saw that list. You know he did. So you have to assume that maybe there was even more incentive and motivation for LaVine to be like, oh, ESPN, we got an ESPN game. Those same dolts who just made that list and told everyone that I'm not one of the best 25 players under 25 years old in the NBA right now. Watch this, motherfuckers. Right? Like, I totally right. believe that that was involved in the way that LaVine played last night. And then to put a cherry on that, and shout out to our guy Mark Karanzolas, who brought this up and reminded me and everybody about this last night after another dominant game from Zach LaVine. How crazy is it that we all just kind of immediately forgot that this dude tore his ACL?
Yes.
Like, yep. That, like, we were talking about how that may have affected his up and down season last year, where he came in halfway through and never really got a solid, you know, rhythm and never really reached his pinnacle point of this is the best best player Zach LaVine can be. This season, it's like we completely forgot. He's doing the high-flying dunks like the amazing play we were just talking about. He's attacking the rim with force. He's aggressive. He's knocking down shots all over the floor. He's showing us his athleticism. And it's like everyone already forgot that Zach LaVine tore his ACL, which is insane. Because at the time of the trade, that was a very big concern for everybody.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because here was my point on that. A lot of people back in the summer, Matt, and we can even go back through our text line and our tweets, thought that maybe, and it was not everybody, but there was a lot of doubters out there who also didn't want Zach LaVine to get a lot of money this summer, thought that him going on Instagram every single day, posting pictures, posting Instagram stories, showing a lot of Bulls fans every day that he's working out, multiple times a day, in the gym, outside, at his home, working out with trainers, staff, his dad, whoever it was, every single day in the summer, showing Bulls fans, hey, I'm out here grinding. I'm trying to get back to the level I was at and even better than that. Matt, I said it back in the summer. I said, this is him showing Bulls fans that he's working his ass off to not only earn that money, but get back to the form that he can be in and ultimately be the star for this Bulls team in that next chapter. And dude, it took a little bit of time, but it's paying off. And I think he doesn't want that ACL to be an excuse of why he can't live up to be an all-star type of player in the NBA. And I think that's proving point right now, right? And it's not being used as an excuse. And we see some other players who kind of use the ACL thing as a crutch, and he doesn't want that to be a crutch or an excuse for why his play doesn't live up or back up. And he wants Bulls fans to realize that he puts in the work, and that's not an excuse for why his game won't live up to the level or the expectation that he has. So I think that's a huge point, and that was a good point by Mark.
Yeah, because I think a lot of fans have already kind of glossed over that. And you and I were nitpicking Zach on our show yesterday. And you know, we've nitpicked Zach a lot for some of the parts of his game that need improving, because we want him to be a vital piece of this rebuilding team. And we give him praise when it's due, and we critique his game in the elements that it deserves critique. But to be doing all of this season and averaging, what, you know, like 24 points per game with some of the, you know, explosions of offense we've seen from him, and the way that he clearly has let everyone know how much he cares. First, at showing frustration from all the losing, and then clearly the way you hear him talk about when this team wins, it's really encouraging to hear that kind of stuff from him, and it is remarkable to think back on all of the work he had to do to recover from that injury to get to where he is now, where we just forget that he tore an ACL.
True. Last thing I got. Who do you think put the Rajon Rondo bobblehead in Jimmy Butler's locker yesterday pregame?
I don't know, but I want to give that person all of the high fives in the world.
I thought it was so funny.
I want it to be Robin Lopez so badly. I want it to be Robin Lopez.
Honestly, the only two players that are left from that team are Robin and Cristiano Felicio. I want it to be Felicio, man.
Oh, my God.
I think that would have been hilarious if it was Felicio.
I don't think Felicio has the IQ to to know to make that joke.
Come on.
I think he is not even that self-aware.
It probably was Lopez. If it was a player, it probably was Lopez. Lopez seems like the Joker type. But maybe it was just somebody on Bulls promotions or somebody in the inside staff. But I can't believe that they had a Rondo bobblehead just laying around somewhere. But maybe somebody had that on their desk or something. But
I love that. It reminded me that Rondo bobblehead night last season, or no, not last season, whatever that was, two seasons ago, Rondo bobblehead night fell during the stint of the season where Rondo was out of the rotation entirely and not playing.
That's just, ooh, ooh. And he got in some heat last night with the Lakers, like, for sitting like in two or three rows behind the Lakers bench or whatever. I don't know. People got upset about that, but whatever. LeBron too quickly passed MJ on the all-time scoring list.
To me, it doesn't change how people feel about the GOAT conversation.
Agree.
At all. I think people are very entrenched in their opinion on that, including me. You know how I feel about LeBron.
We can talk about it more tomorrow,
you know,
too.
It is a great achievement. And, you know, yeah, if you want to save it for tomorrow's episode, we can go into it a little bit further, because it is a momentous moment in the history of the NBA, given what those two players have accomplished. It was kind of a little bit of a letdown as far as the moment. You know, I watched it happen last night, right before we went on the air for Outsiders. And it was just kind of like, I think it'll get glossed over just because the Lakers are such a train wreck right now.
And that's why it was a little bit depressing. And I think let's save it for tomorrow. Let's talk about it a little bit more tomorrow. We wanted to focus more on the Sixers game because it was an electric game last night. But I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Hit us up. How do you feel after last night's game? 331-979-1369. Drop us voicemails. We want to hear from you. Give us your instant reaction from last night's game. Seeing Jimmy come back for his second time. Watching Zach LaVine pop off. How you feeling? Bulls have won six of the last nine games. Whatever side you sit on. Optimist, pessimist, somewhere in the middle. Realist. Bulls are in their final stretch. We want to hear from you. 331-979-1369. Drop us your text, your voicemails. We'll get to a bunch of those on tomorrow's episode, as well as talk about this LeBron versus MJ thing a little bit, as LeBron passed Michael Jordan on the all-time scoring list last night, and a whole bunch of other topics to wrap up the week. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. On Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck. Follow us on Instagram, at Locked On Bulls. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com